And so I'll make a motion to pass the January minutes. A second.
I will second that. I do have a number of corrections here.
Okay, so discussion on the minutes then before we vote.
Okay. First off, thank you for the excellent job as usual. Just a couple minor things here. On the page four, last paragraph before upcoming business, you said she also disclosed she's involved in a property. I believe that was Elena. You clarify that she. And I could scan these and send it to you if you want.
Yeah, you better. I can't bring up my. I'm not looking
sure.
At the right screen right now.
Okay, so that was that. And then there was a sentence here that the paragraph above that. John said he has the quote considerable discretion quote wording had been removed and private drives are allowed in four or fewer subdivision lots. And I know we talked about those things, but I am not sure what that sentence means. I would just recommend striking it out unless somebody remembers what that specifically was about.
John, are you looking at the minutes that I sent out earlier?
Like earlier today, yes. Yeah, I just printed those off. So if something is confused there, and I think we could just say Colleen wanted to return to the initial subdivision amendments. Or something like that. Whatever I said is so garbled, and I can't reconstruct what it was supposed to be.
Okay. If you would just send me your corrections,
I will send you those. And
then, I thought I'd proof it, but obviously,
yeah.
Awesome stuff.
And then I wanted to discuss. This is more a general policy thing, but it is a specific correction to two points. That we say a public hearing on RV park CUP, and later, previous at the short-term rental one. And it's really not specific what we approved. And I would recommend that we basically describe it as the names of the people and either the street address or at least the location, like saying.
John, is this a change to the minutes? Or
yeah,
yes.
I think for the record, if somebody's reading this a couple of years from now, they're not going to know what the Stedman Peterson RSTCR CUP necessarily was. And it would be good to say that we approved our residential short-term rental application from full names at a property in Boulder King Estates, or preferably even the street address. Then we know what we approved. Or you could refer to it by the title of what you posted on the website. That specificity of what document we approved, I think, is very important for minutes.
Okay, that's a good idea. Thank you.
And then the same one for the Gardner one. And then I was going to recommend, since we went through the worksheet, we should probably record in the minutes the final score, which I think we were at plus quite a bit, 6 or 8.
I have Colleen's copy, which I'm going to replicate and put in the record.
Okay, so I would recommend that we include the final, after we went through the worksheet, for the record, we should state what the final score was.
Okay.
Because that was the basis of our approval. So I'll scan these and send them to you. And with that, I'll make the, I will have seconded to approve as corrected.
Okay, thank you, John. All in favor of passing the January minutes with John's changes. Matt Cochran, and aye.
John, aye.
I didn't get the ayes.
Yeah, keep voting, commissioners.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina?
Tina Carlson, aye.
Okay, thank you. I think that's everyone, Peg.
Okay.
I don't mind if we do have alphabetical order like we did last time. That makes it clear who's supposed to speak up next.
Right. What is alphabetical order by our last names? Cochran, Hughes, H-I-J, Carlson, Thompson, then Varanth.
Yeah.
Okay. Got that? It'll be a test. Okay. Okay, item number three, the agenda. We're going to turn it, we're going to work with Lee here for a little bit. And just for context, what we're looking at here is the long, part of the long revamp of the subdivision ordinance, which town council, there, you know, there's some background noise here. If you're not talking, I wonder if you can mute yourself. Thank you. So I'm still hearing my echo. Okay, sorry, it's a little distracting there. That's better. I think it was from the big room there, Colleen, sorry. So yeah, so with the subdivision ordinance, we're going to work on, I think the, I want to spend maybe 20 to 30 minutes tops on that first long part, which is just some of the basic changes. And Lee, you'll explain that. And then we'll move on to the minor subdivision relook and spend a little more time there. So maybe Lee, you can give us an overview. Then if we have specific questions as the commission, we'll ask you about this larger piece that you've taken a chunk out of.
Okay. That is a good way to proceed. The state legislature fiddled with all sorts of things in the statutes that affect the way that municipalities do planning and land use regulation. And it becomes quite tedious to pick your way through and then to follow the path from what the legislature changed to Boulder's ordinances, and then from the part of Boulder's ordinances that is most directly affected to all the other parts that are indirectly affected. I'm going to go real quick through the major themes that I had to work on so far. And then I think it is way better to open it up to questions that people have than to try to wade through a line at a time. So the first thing we had to address was vested rights. A vested right is the right to continue a development under the rules by which it was approved. In other words, if I were to get a conditional use permit for a project, and then a month or two later, the town of Boulder adopted new regulations, those new regulations would not apply. My original approval would hold. Okay. That's the law of the land, not just in Utah, but essentially everywhere. The legislature, even before the last session, had quite a bit of specific language about vested rights in the statute. The town of Boulder, Boulder Town, did not have much. And it was necessary to fix that, which I did by making a few changes in chapter 151 of the code, and then proposing to add a whole chapter that clarifies vested rights. We then got into the whole notion of land divisions of different types, and the legislature fiddled with all of it in trying to assess the impact of the legislature's changes. I discovered that there are a lot of issues with the subdivision ordinance that stands, one of which is that there are three different definitions of subdivision in the town's current ordinances. They are not necessarily consistent, and not a single one of them is in the definition section of the subdivision ordinance. Then we get to parcel boundary adjustments, which is the adjustment of lot lines outside of a platted subdivision. And Boulder's ordinance was nearly silent on that. The only place you could find anything was in one of the definitions of what a subdivision is not. Not a place where a person would normally look. So I have clarified that and done so in a form that makes it at least much easier to find. There is a question raised there. For the most part, the town cannot regulate parcel boundary adjustments. It's not within your power. You can look at parcel boundary adjustments that involve parcels on which there is a dwelling. That's not where the issues or violations are most likely to come, and I'm going to suggest that we not make things more complicated by doing that. But if people have a question about it, you do have a choice. You can look at some, a limited slice of parcel boundary adjustments. Then there are the changes in lot lines within subdivisions, which are plat amendments. And there was almost nothing. The current ordinance was virtually silent on that. If you go to state law, you find there's a requirement that the town be able to respond. And so I created a process by which the town could respond to plat amendments. The legislature made a change about street or road widths that doesn't affect anything that Boulder is doing right now. The legislature has lots and lots of definitions. I think there are 70 some in the last go round. And there's no requirement that our definitions that we use be identical, but on the other hand, it's a good practice to have things be consistent. And so I have spent, and I'm going to have to continue to spend a great deal of time trying to get the definitions, worked out. Cross references, the way the code of ordinances is right now, there's all sorts of different ways of referring to other parts of the code or to state law. And in the new work I'm doing, I'm boiling that all down to just using one way to refer to the rest of the code, unless it's a specific citation of the code. Same with state law, unless it's a specific citation of state law, it's just going to say state law. Nothing about this ought to be controversial. It's just trying to bring things up to consistency with the legislature's work, but even more importantly, really, to clarify minor things like how do I adjust lot lines within a subdivision? That's going to come up, right? You need a process for it. It isn't very exciting. It will hopefully never be very exciting, but you need to be able to answer that question. And so really all of this work that you see here is about answering those sometimes very detailed questions. And so in order to make it digestible both for the Planning Commission and the council and the public, I broke it into some different ordinances that could be considered and taken to hearing separately. So there's an ordinance on vested rights, which adjusts some language in the building regulations that really was problematic. The building regulations, the way they're written, just assume that, oh, hey, I'm building something simple. I come in for a permit. If you're trying to do a complicated, even a moderately complicated project, what was there is not going to be very helpful to you as the applicant. Those of you who were on the Planning Commission, which I guess at this point is a minority, remember that we used the idea of a bean and salsa company at the old gas station as an example when we were talking about the commercial development code. And, you know, that involved four different buildings ultimately, two employee housing units, a processing plant, and the remodeling of the old gas station. You just couldn't do a project like that under the way the building regulations were written. All your approvals would expire. That would violate the state law about vested rights. It would also pretty much violate common sense about how you let people proceed. So made the changes that are necessary about vested rights. And that takes a fair amount of space, but I think it's pretty clear. It allows the town security that projects will be built exactly as they were presented to you. It allows the developer security that you won't change the rules in the middle of the game. There is a way for the town to provide for minor changes, as plans often do have to have minor changes. There is also a process for substantial changes that ultimately gives the Planning Commission the power to say, hey, no, wait a minute, you've changed so much that this is a whole new project. Okay. The amendments regulating land divisions deal with some really garbled language in the ordinances as it stands, trying to iron out the necessity of platting subdivisions And then to provide for parcel boundary adjustments, which are not subdivisions, and for lot line adjustments, which are within a subdivision, and tries to clarify how adjoining landowners could adjust their boundary lines, whether they are within or without a subdivision. There's a whole procedure there for plat amendments. It's something that you might not use for 5 years. But if somebody comes in with that issue, you've got an answer to that question that doesn't exist in the existing ordinances. And then the final piece, the third draft ordinance that you have, is a beginning on working on the definitions, both to bring them into compliance with what the state says on things like the definition of affected entity. Affected entities are like the water company that you are required to give notice to if there's a subdivision that might affect its easements or rights of way. And there's a handful of the most obvious definitions here. There's going to be a lot more to work on definitions. And the goal here is not just to come into compliance with state law, but to make things internally consistent and to try to eliminate some redundancies that will actually make the ordinances easier to understand and administer. So you would act on what I've given you here in three chunks, right? The vested rights chunk, the land division chunk, and the definitions chunk. We may end up with another chunk. Well, we will probably almost certainly end up with another chunk before this is done. But by breaking it up that way, instead of putting it into one huge proposed ordinance, I think it would allow for more focused public hearings and conversations about what's going on. And with that, I'm going to stop and see if there are any questions about anything that you saw in here. I know it is a lot to digest. That's the nature of this beast, is that it sometimes takes quite a few words to answer a fairly simple question.
Thank you, Lee. The nature of the beast is also a little bit geological, just a little bit by little bit. But thank you for all your work. So Commission, do you have specific questions about either of these three ordinances for Lee? If you're talking and you're muted, make sure you, John, I couldn't see if you're talking there or not.
Colleen, I have a question.
Okay.
So the definitions list that you gave us is quite a bit smaller than the definition list that I found in zoning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if they're the same. It looks like you just took, I'm not really sure. But
right.
The one,
well, as I said here, this is just the first installment on definitions.
That's what I thought.
There will be another, the next installment will be three times as long as this is.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Is there any sense in waiting for all the definitions in one ordinance, or do you suggest we just do it as is?
I think I would wait on this piece of it until we have the next installment.
Okay, so
that's one reason I broke it up, is so that you can move one piece of this forward without having to move it all forward.
Okay, but for the definitions, we can sort of set aside till you come to terms.
You can. I just hope that people will take a look at them and see if there's anything striking in there, anything that they have a question about, because you know your questions will help clarify better than anything else will, right? If you guys look at this and say, oh, wait a minute, I don't get that, then I can fix it so that you do get it. And it's, you know, it's a good thing to do it now when we're working on a whole bunch of definitions at once, rather than to wait. But yeah, the next installment of this will be three times as long as this is.
Colleen has a question.
Okay, so my question, what I wanted to do was, I noticed on page 11 the word billboard.
Yes.
This was kind of wondering where that came from, if it's going to be in conflict with our sign ordinance. Because
that's a really good question, actually. I didn't understand why it was here at the beginning. This is the definition that you see there. First of all, just to kind of check off the boxes, this is the same as the definition in state law. So there's no inconsistency with state law. Billboard was never defined in the zoning ordinance where the sign regulations are. It was defined in the subdivision ordinance, and that's one reason we're doing all this work, is to iron out what's where and have it be in the right place. There probably, I need to look more closely at the sign regs and see if we really need this. I assumed that somebody put it in there because you needed it, but then that's not always a valid assumption, particularly with the subdivision part of this that grew like Topsy and does not hang together. As far as I know, the regulations don't permit off-premise signs, which would include billboards. So it may be that we end up not having to have this definition. I was just looking at it as a definition and making sure it held together as a definition, and I'll have to go back and see if we even need it to make things work. You may have the issue of billboards addressed in a different way.
On that one, Lee, the state legislature has been very protective of the outdoor advertising industry, so they've given them a lot of extraordinary rights, as you probably are aware. We do have in Boulder, at least I can think of three off-premises billboards that are effectively grandfathered because they were mm-hmm. there before our ordinance. So
right.
That's something we need to keep in mind.
That's a good point.
So what I'm saying is, in my codified book that I just got, under zoning definition, there is no billboard. And I was just wondering where it came from.
It comes from the subdivision ordinance.
Okay.
Why it was there, I cannot tell you, but that's where it comes from.
Okay, well,
the subdivision ordinance is really an agglomeration of pieces that do not hang together. And this just happens to be one of those pieces.
Well, good catch. And I think we can suss it out, Colleen. So
under the ordinance, there is no billboard. It talks about, it goes into great detail, all signs, but not.
Right.
Anyway, that was my question, basically. That's really the only thing. I went through a lot of this, and I like to see that the relative standards, the standards that we were using, have been put into the definitions, and that's really my only comment.
Sure.
Okay, I have some questions, small ones about, I'm looking at the vested interest ordinance. These are
vested
out of curiosity.
Yes.
Vested rights, sorry. So the 180 days, is that pretty standard for small mountain towns in the West?
It is, and it's no change from what the building regulations say now.
Okay.
I took it straight from there. I think it's reasonable, useful if you want, without being too strict. And you will note further down that either of the deadlines that are set can be extended by the town council for cause.
Right.
So that there is relief for a landowner who encounters a COVID-like scenario, like a pandemic comes, you can't build stuff, maybe you need an extension. Well, you could get one the way this is set up.
Right.
Same could be true of a big weather event or who knows what. There is discretionary flexibility built in here for the town to help somebody out if they get into problems with the deadlines. But you have to have some sort of deadline so that you don't have half-finished projects sitting around.
Great, thank you. I think that's really my only question. I mean, what I read through seemed straightforward as far as I know. Anyone else have questions on this piece for Lee?
I have a couple. Specifics? This is Elena. Mm-hmm. Lee, on page 5, there, I think it's 15403, there's just a mm-hmm. phrase that I'm hoping you can explain to me that didn't quite make sense to me.
Right.
It's talking about the building codes, and then it says 10-year exemption in state law for single-family dwellings built on an approved subdivision lot. Can you explain that a little bit?
State law says that the construction of houses in a subdivision for 10 years has to go under the building code that existed when the subdivision was approved. So even though the building codes are updated on a regular basis for reasons that are not entirely or maybe even at all clear to me, the legislature says, and this applies only to homes within platted subdivisions, okay? It's a fairly narrow thing. But for some reason, the legislature felt that if I get a subdivision approved, that any home built there should be able to go under the building code that was applicable at that moment for 10 years.
Huh.
And I said, you have to assume, because it's true, that the state legislature's actions on this is controlled by the development industry in the Salt Lake suburbs.
Yeah.
And what you see here favors whatever the developers think they need. So there must have been some developer who had an issue with changes in the building code and persuaded the legislature to create this exemption.
Okay.
It's a pretty narrow exemption. You know, if you build a house on a parcel that's not in a subdivision, it doesn't apply. It doesn't apply to accessory dwelling units. It is what it is. It's weird, but it's there and we got to live with it.
Okay. Yeah, it just would be, it's just good for us to know if we're approving a subdivision at some point that.
Yeah, the homes in that subdivision will proceed under the, you know, if you approve a subdivision in the year 2023, the homes built in there go under the 2023 building code until 2033.
Okay.
Why that is, I do not know, but that's how it is.
Yeah. Thank you. The other thing I wanted to point out just, from personal experience is with the lot line adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on one of those right now for the thing that I'm trying to do. And we emailed Curtis and Mark Gift because we weren't sure what the right procedure was for going forward with that.
Mm-hmm.
And they both, when they read the new state legislature stuff, they both thought that it went straight to town council and not to planning commission. I don't have a interest in which way it goes. I just wanted to point that out if that means anything.
No, I think that it follows a path that you could take straight to town council. But Boulder Town Council has delegated, you know, a fair number of tasks and duties to the Planning Commission. And my suspicion is that the Planning Commission will be better prepared, more familiar, and better able to evaluate whether a lot line amendment creates a problem or not. You know, this is a pretty simple, straightforward procedure. The Planning Commission reviews it. It could be appealed to town council if need be, but you're a lot more likely to notice an issue than council. So
and then it would go on
the route
council.
It takes here.
Okay.
If there's an appeal, only if there's an appeal would it go into council.
So otherwise it would be like a CUP, it just goes to planning commission. And
that's right, planning commission would sign it and it'd be done.
Cool. Last thing I was going to point out is just it says administrator a lot of times in here, and assuming
uh-huh.
zoning administrator, I wonder if we just want to clarify that.
We can. That needs to go in the definitions, right?
Yeah. I just think for us, it's all obvious, but when people are reading it and trying to figure it mm-hmm. out what to do, it might not be obvious to them.
Right. Let me make a note here and I will fix that in the definitions chapter.
Cool. Thanks.
Okay.
That's it for me.
Any other questions? Let's see, Tina or John.
Tina, do you have anything or I'll go?
So So I have just one comment on the zoning administrator information that Elena just brought up. At this point, we're not going to have a zoning administrator. We'll have somebody in the interim do that information. So do we actually want to put zoning administrator, or do we want to leave it there? That's my only comment, just administrator.
Well, I think in the long term, we're going to have a zoning administrator, and that's the person that the public is initially directed to get in on the ordinances. So I think it's valuable.
Okay.
Tina?
I'm good now. Thank you.
Okay. John?
Okay. And Matt, if I start running too far on time, you can cut me off and I'll deal with some of these one-on-one with Lee. So I'm going to hit the most important ones first. So as far as the extensions of time, I saw a little contradiction that in paragraph D on page 4, we've got the town council approving an extension of time.
Yes.
But it's only the zoning administrator who has to approve the original building permit. So I'm going to suggest that be changed from town council to zoning administrator for an extension of time for cause. And I think that's a purely administrative thing. The bigger question I have, and this is a sort of something we should think about as a commission, is that the time limits that we have set really don't reflect historic Boulder practice. Whereas we all know many homes are largely or partially owner built. They work on them over when they have time. The building code and the building inspector itself have routinely approved partial occupancy, where some part of the building is finished and they let you move in, but other parts, like finishing the basement or the attic or the second story, are still in progress. So in the actual process in Boulder, very few homes are actually completed in 180 days. I think the ordinance years ago had that you had to just show continual progress, that if work was abandoned for like 6 months, that voided the permit. But as long as work was ongoing, it was valid. So I think we should really think about what is not so much what we had in the old ordinance, which was never enforced, but rather wording that makes sense for the realities and the town that Boulder is.
Well, let me point out that you don't have to finish within 180 days. You have to you have to begin within 180 days. And you have 18 months to finish. And that is exactly what was in Chapter 151 before I got it. I have just tried to clarify it.
Yeah, I acknowledge. I'm just saying many homes have taken longer than even 18 months.
Yeah, so you could apply for an extension. Alternatively, and I would have no objection to tinkering with the number of months, you can just change this. The goal is to not have a project get partway through and then sit in Boulder with the impact that has on the neighbors and their property values.
I agree that's a municipal concern, but for example, we have that double wide up on
so
North.
So, John, what do you suggest for time?
I am suggesting that you simply have to. We could either just let the zoning somebody routinely go to the zoning administrator every 6 months or once a year and say, I'm still working on the place. Here's the evidence that I'm making progress. But I think we should allow for the fact that a lot of these buildings have taken many years to be finished. And I don't think that once the exterior is complete, there's very little impact on the community. If somebody is still finishing off their kitchen or an upstairs bedroom.
So you're suggesting no timeline?
I would say either a very generous timeline or simply require that the owner be required to show ongoing progress. That would give us the ability to enforce if something was just totally abandoned and been sitting for years. But as long as the owner is making progress, I'd be willing to allow that.
I would prefer a cap because it just brings a lot of extra work for both the builder and for the planning commission to have someone checking in all the time.
Well, then I...
I feel like the 18 months is a good deadline, and then they can extend. It's not like we're stopping them. It's just, I feel like we have shorter check-ins. It's creating a lot more work for the admin staff, and it's probably not needed. And all they have to do is extend it. It's not like we're charging them more. It's just a simple piece of paperwork, and then talking to the building inspector.
Yeah, I think especially if we take it from town council to zoning administrator, I would be fine with that.
So are we good with that?
I may want to raise it again, but let's see how that wording polishes up. To move on, Lee, you've added a section 154.04
mm-hmm.
and 154.05.
Yep.
Which are
and 06.
And 06, yes, that's true. Which are totally new and are really some very strict requirements. And first, I'm going to point out that Boulder does not do plan checking. We basically rely on we approve the issuance of a building permit, the county issues the permit, and then it's between the owner or builder and the building inspector on issues like minor dimensional changes and so forth. We don't have the resources to do architectural plan check like some cities do.
Right.
Further on that is that this, as you recall, the state legislature, I think two sessions ago, basically said that we cannot regulate things like roof pitch or interior room arrangements or exterior finishes on single family homes. So for example, the type of example you use of a different light fixture by state law right now isn't even in our jurisdiction. So
It is on a commercial project.
It is, and this is what I think is happening is that some of the stuff that you've got in applies to CUPs, not necessarily to single family homes. So I think we need to think through exactly what we're trying to accomplish. But I wanted to point out, this is a totally new requirement we've never talked about as a commission. I think it would be very infeasible for Boulder, and in many cases inappropriate, because on commercial projects, we also have the CUP process, which assures that whatever conditions we set are met. So maybe we need to integrate this with the CUP project and take it out.
So John, basically you want us to review 154. Can you scroll to this peg if you have a chance? 154.0405?
And 06, yeah.
And 06.
Yeah, Lee's done it's a good piece of work that he's done, but I don't think it's what we want.
Am I at the right place now?
Yeah.
Yeah. What, back up a little bit.
Well, you've got a good one right there. Minor material changes. The administrator, which would be zoning administrator, may permit substitutions for proposed materials if the proposed substitution has the same appearance of performance as the original material originally approved. Up to now, we have been leaving that completely up to between the owner and the building inspector. If I want to change from brick to vinyl siding. Please. Tina or whoever.
Sorry, who was speaking? Tina, so you're sort of frozen. You might turn off your video, see if we get you clear. No, you're muted now. So I'm not sure I'm following. Yeah. So basically right now, John, you're saying that what happens is the owner builder goes, works it out with the building permit, the building inspector, and Lee is basically directing these changes to the zoning administrator. Am I correct on that?
To the extent that we're even on a single family home, up to now, yes, you have to submit plans. We're checking them for setbacks, which we do regulate. But beyond the setbacks, we really don't have a lot of jurisdiction of how somebody builds their house. If they want to move walls around or something like that, we don't have even jurisdiction. So why should they have to go to the zoning administrator on that type of case? Well, I would suggest, you know, this is a whole new discussion if we want to get into plan review and that on. Please take over.
I was not speaking. I might have been just turning papers. Sorry.
Okay. All right. So.
So hold on, John. So Lee, do you have any quick answer to that?
Well, I do. Suppose that we approve a subdivision. The CAT operator gets out there and says, you know, I don't want to follow the plan. I'm going to put the road over here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you need a way to address that?
Okay, so I think one thing we can do is clarify on those 150, on 04, 05, and 06. If they're intended to apply to subdivisions, we can certainly say that. But as it's worded now, it is vague, and it does imply that it would apply to a single family home or to
It's not vague because it applies to everything.
And I'm saying it's just, okay, and I certainly would be opposed to ever recommending to the town council that we get in the business of plan review on single family homes. And as I say, the state legislature limits our ability to do it if we want it.
So well, this is within the subdivision ordinance, John.
I'm sorry.
Well, this is in the vested rights. This is in the new chapter on vested rights.
Does that fall outside of the subdivision ordinance then, Lee?
This applies to everything you approve. Period. That's why it's a separate chapter, so that there's no repetition. So this applies to a conditional use permit. And presumably, if you approve a conditional use permit, you want what appears on the ground to be what you approve. This applies to subdivisions. And again, presumably, you want what you approved to show up rather than something else. And I can assure you that sometimes people do decide to make changes without a whole lot of thought. The reality is that vested rights per se don't normally apply to a single family home because the only thing that would change that affects the construction of a single family home is the building code itself, and they're not immune from changes in the building code anyway, no matter what we decide to do. The main thing would be if I receive a zoning permit for a single family home, do I have to put it where I said I would? That's the question here. And I think the answer has to be, yeah, you should put it where you said you would. That's what this is about fidelity between what you were promised and what you get.
Okay. Perhaps, so in the interest of time, maybe we should talk about this one offline in detail, but I would agree with you on the location on the ground. That's what we approved. I would question some of this other stuff and would be very much opposed. The last one on vested rights, on 154.07, I started going through our ordinances and I'm finding provisions all over about something's doing 1 year, something's 180 days, something's 18 months. I think perhaps what we need to do is make a table of what we've actually got in our ordinances and see if it makes sense and what things might need to be adjusted. So I'm just going to suggest, because there are actually multiple things in our ordinances already that create rights that have vesting.
Well, this supersedes everything in Chapter 151 already. I already made those changes. There probably are places, you're probably right, that there are other places where there's time frames that don't relate to other time frames. And we probably ought to go through systematically. certainly in the subdivision ordinance, there's chaos. And this is designed to reduce that chaos to one set of principles. All it would take to do that is to make a couple of revisions here and there where we find other time frames. But the intent here is that there's one set of rules about how you go forward into the future, right, instead of several different contradictory things.
I fully support that.
John, any other questions?
Yeah, I've got one more, but I see Colleen's got her hand up. Why don't we let Colleen go first?
Yeah.
So I only have one comment on 154, 04, 05, and 06. I don't have a problem with any of it, mainly because I think John's talking about you can't change anything on the inside. And to me, this looks like things that are on the outside. They're dimensional changes, they're material changes, mainly on the outside, and I don't have a problem with that. And that's my only comment.
Okay, John, your last question.
The last one. So on the boundary adjustments, Lee, I'm going to make a suggestion that we simply use the wording, and it's not polished legalese, but that boundary line adjustments of parcels and subdivision lots shall comply with Utah State Code 109A524. And that says everything I think that we need to say as a town. It establishes a procedure. We can't change what state law is. We have to follow that anyway. It doesn't add anything to state law, but it brings us in compliance law. That's my suggestion to clean up that whole thing about boundary line adjustments, to simply cite the state law.
Well, I think that's deficient, because then you're going to be scrambling around trying to bring down the statutes, whereas here, it's right in front of you. It's clear that the town is the actor. And you have a set of procedures here that you can follow that are consistent with the way you deal with other approvals, including the need for a public hearing if that should happen, which it probably will not in most cases. Referring an ordinary citizen to the state law is just asking for confusion. So I don't do that.
So my suggestion here is, I want to wrap this conversation up, is John, with the vested rights, maybe you can talk to Lee offline about some of those things. And in the meantime, in order to at least move this forward, Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, but putting this forward at least for a public hearing in March, the first two, not the definitions at this point,
right,
would that be appropriate? And then we could hear what the public has to say on it. We can discuss it further, and if any more amendments need to be changed, we can change them.
I have one question about that.
Yes.
I will work on the idea that it's clear that it's the zoning administrator. That's easy to take care of. But I want to go back for a moment to the point that John has been making about the timeframes. And I think there are two choices here, neither one of which might be the final solution, but if you're going to take this to hearing, it's easy to make a change here right now if you want to. One is to leave it as is, that things have to be finished within 18 months. The other would be to change that language to say that the owner basically has to show continued diligence or continued progress and take away the 18 months and just go with a continued progress standard. That's a little more difficult to determine, but John is probably right that it's also a little more realistic for some pieces of all this. You know, we can leave it as is and see how the public hearing goes, or we can make that change here, depending on people's inclination. It's not hard to change it.
I say we listen to the public on this.
Tina has her hand up.
Tina.
Tina, are you muted? No, you're not.
You might have to type it in the chat, Tina, because we're not getting any reception from you. Okay, I'd sort of like to move on here. Let's, so do we need to make a vote, Peg, to put this on as a public hearing or just something we do?
I don't remember right now, so you may as well
okay.
go for it.
So
make
I'll make,
a, make
yeah.
a motion and make it.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion for to put the vested rights ordinance in the land division, is that what you called it, mm-hmm. ordinance, up for public hearing in March. So, would anyone like to second that?
For standard.
I'll second it.
That's what we're doing.
Okay, any discussion on that? Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Linda Hughes, aye.
Tina?
Tina, you might have to chat your vote.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John abstain.
Kind of important to get Tina's vote, and I don't know how to have her do that unless she's...
Well, she's showing up in chat right now, isn't she?
Is she?
Not.
I'm not seeing her chat.
It's a Tina I.
Not.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I would just say that also... the building inspector, which we use, is the county, and the county's already talked about that. The building inspector in the county.
Sorry, Tina, you're just not translating.
Okay.
He's trying to say the county building inspector has limits. So it's going to put it all on the building inspector
office. Okay, I'd like to switch gears into the minor subdivision discussion. Is there anything that you, let's see, I have questions. How would you like to give us an overview or cliff notes on this, Lee?
Sure. This whole conversation began with questions about the use of private driveways to get access to lots. And we've been over that and have moved on to say that needs to be an option. If you look at the current ordinances, there's a prohibition on that in the zoning ordinance. There is a piece of the subdivision ordinance that also prohibits it, and then there's a piece of the subdivision ordinance that permits it. So there is no clear, and to be honest, just plain no useful direction on what is in the code as it stands. And once you follow that path, you begin to look at the way the regulation of subdivisions goes, and it's just not coherent. There's provision in there about billboards. Well, billboards are not a subdivision thing. How did it get in there? Curtis pointed out to me a long time ago when I first started working with you all that there's a whole separate building permit that's set up in the subdivision chapter rather than in the zoning chapter or the building regulations and contradicts both of them. The subdivision stuff that you've got isn't useful, period. And rather than trying to change the whole thing and address big subdivisions, I felt like we should do what most jurisdictions do for the question we've been dealing with, which is that there are some subdivisions that are small enough and appropriately located that we actually ease up some of the standards. And also, if you read this, you'll realize that we ease up on the procedure to some degree as well. And so we've got a minor subdivision procedure set here that allows the Planning Commission to deal with a four-lot subdivision or a three-lot subdivision pretty expeditiously, because we have checklisted standards that are quite clear, and a simplified procedure for going here that does not involve a preliminary plat. And the trade-off there is that you have to have four or fewer lots. The only use that's permitted is residential, and residential, of course, includes the potential for home businesses and the potential for accessory dwellings. The commercial subdivision would have to go through the other procedure, or a subdivision that for one reason or another couldn't meet these standards. And then the standards are just rattled off. We could and probably should talk about whether you want it to be four lots, three lots, six lots. The street access has been clarified to say that you can't create a new public street or any other dedicated public way or space. All lots must be directly accessible from an existing public street or served by private access easements that are clearly delineated on the proposed minor subdivision plat and in the accompanying materials. And then D follows on that, say, will flag lots be permitted to facilitate direct access? And the answer is possibly. The Planning Commission under this would have the power to waive the minimum lot width requirements in the dimensional standards table, where they, for you, think that a flag lot makes sense. That way you don't have to mess with easements and any potential conflict between the people who own the easement versus the people who own the land. And there is always that potential for conflict. You know, if you're talking about flag lots in an urban reality with small lots, they don't work very well. But where we're talking about the densities that exist in Boulder, for the most part, flag lots are not going to be problematic, and it's up to the Planning Commission's discretion anyway. Water supply, what I've said here, and this might be the piece of this that's most controversial, is if you're going to qualify to get this quick trip through the procedure for a minor subdivision, you have to be on the water system. You can't use wells. Okay. Wastewater, you have to show that there's a site available. And then there's a whole thing about avoiding all sorts of different natural hazards and protecting resources there in item G. Those are separated out in the checklist that I sent you. H is there. Because we needed a place to have a standard of what the buffers look like. We might consolidate that with a standard for larger subdivisions as we go through making further changes. And again, this could be controversial, but to qualify for the privilege of having a minor subdivision, no adverse impact on irrigation and avoid building envelopes on irrigated lands, which protects to some degree the what I think is the essence of Boulder's character. You can bring in a sketch plan drawn on a Big Chief tablet if you want to, so you don't have to make a significant investment. You come and talk to the Planning Commission about what you're going to do. The purpose of that is for the Planning Commission to make sure that the applicant understands the rules, right? And then you go through a very simple public hearing permit. If you have your act together, you don't need to go preliminary and then final like a larger subdivision. You bring in a final plat that meets the standards. You go through the Planning Commission and you are done. And that, you know, you have to record it obviously before you can sell it. And that clarifies how we deal with small subdivisions. And it's designed here so that you have to rely almost not at all on the rest of the subdivision ordinance, because the rest of the subdivision ordinance is so difficult to figure out. So that's, I think that fits the spirit of what Elena and I talked about in a separate conversation, and the spirit of what I understand from people is, okay, if we're creating a teeny handful of lots that meet certain characteristics, then let's streamline this and let it happen.
Thank you. So I'd like to start and go through this in a focused way. So let's go peg to A of the first I don't know what line it was, of the first sort of standards, I suppose. No, further down we get into
right there. Right. There's yeah. a right there what, at the bottom yeah. of the page. That's good.
Okay. So comments, questions on A, what land uses are permitted in minor subdivisions? Okay. B.
Unmute. Oh. No, I had a comment. I didn't unmute in time. Okay, Lee, we have is I understand what you're trying to do here, and incidentally, I really appreciate the work you've done here. At first, I thought, why do we need this? And the more I looked at the existing subdivision ordinance, I decided, yep, this is probably the way we have to go. On this one, we have a zoning ordinance, and if I read that strictly, you've actually prohibited agriculture in minor subdivisions, although you. I think we should simply rely on that it was zoned GMU before, and what's permitted in GMU is still allowed after the subdivision, unless concurred with the subdivision, it's rezoned as something like HDR or LDR.
John, I'm not following the context of where you're at here. Are we talking about A or B, or are we somewhere else?
Okay, so what
land use? No, I get what John is trying to say.
Okay.
And he's basically saying that he reads this and he's right. It could be read to prohibit agriculture in a minor subdivision. And I think the key to that is not to worry so much about the zoning. This is almost all going to happen in the GMU zoning district anyway. But just to clarify that agriculture, continuing agriculture is also permitted. And I take that as a good point for clarification.
I would further say, you know, we should, I think there are a couple other things in the, that are permitted in GMU under our table of uses as either permitted or conditional uses. And I think that should still continue if it's GMU before and it's GMU after, it should be allowed to do whatever is allowed in GMU. So that was my suggestion, is we just really take that out or say that the land uses are the ones permitted by the table of uses for the zone.
Well, you know, I guess I'm not excited about allowing a higher impact use, like say a church that's permitted as a minor subdivision. I think that requires the full consideration. This is a privilege. This gives you a streamline with no preliminary plat, with an easy public hearing process. We're giving people a privilege here, and we need to extend it only to those things for which it really, really makes sense.
Right. Okay. This is a good point. You know, one thing I will say is the fact that we can make a regulation isn't the reason, a good reason to make a regulation, especially when it has unintended consequences. So you'll frequently hear me question things like this. But two things. Okay. One is if this is intended to be a restriction that runs with the land, we in effect are saying that if you go to minor subdivision, you are in effect rezoning under something more restrictive than GMU. And I'm not, if that's our intent, we should be explicit about it so the public knows that's what we're proposing. The second thing is, as you know what Orrin Hatch put in, if I want to build a church in a residential area and it happened to have been a minor subdivision 10 years previously, the town can't prohibit that. So that was, you know, churches are protected in all zones. So I think the thing is, are you intending that this restriction of for minor subdivision then becomes something that runs with the land?
Well, a subdivision obviously runs with the land.
Yeah.
Those lot lines are forever, right?
Yep.
The lot lines will endure long after the buildings have fallen down.
Yep.
That's the nature of this act, and that's one reason why I am somewhat stingy with making it easy. I see the point that you're making about This is, but you got to remember, this is a voluntary rezoning. This isn't imposed by the town. This is at the request of the owner.
Okay, yeah.
And I think that makes a significant difference.
In that case, we should integrate that with the zoning ordinance. But I think if that's the intent, that once something becomes a minor subdivision, in effect, maybe we're thinking that we should rezone, we could do, for example, if you make a minor subdivision in GMU, it becomes an LDR or HDR zone. That would be consistent with what we're doing elsewhere.
Well, I agree that there is a question here that needs to be answered. Actually, there's two questions. One is just to make it clear that continuing agriculture is allowed. That's easy enough to add. We don't have to have any debate about that. You have to say it. The relationship to the underlying zoning district is worth talking about. And I hear you, and I would like to tinker with this a little bit and send back something that tries to answer that question clearly. I want to stay with the intent that, you know, the ability to do a minor subdivision, which is a very streamlined, checklisted subdivision process, that needs to be viewed as a privilege that the town can condition as it wishes.
Agreed. Okay.
Great. So some clarification there strikes me. I think those are both good questions, and I will take care of the ag when that's easy, and then I'll give some thought to the relationship to the underlying zoning, and we can answer that.
Okay. Any further questions on A from the commission? Okay, let's move to B. How many lots are permitted in a minor subdivision? Personally, 4 would be the max for me, just even thinking of the zoning. But I'm not sure what other people think, or why would there be a reason to go less or more in your mind, Lee?
Well, like for instance, Montana state law requires minor subdivisions and allows 6. You know, at some point it's kind of arbitrary as to what you think is really small. Is 4 really small? Is 6 really small? If you started talking about 10, I would begin to say, I don't think so. But if you said we'd rather do 6 than 4 here, I wouldn't have any heartburn about it. 4 has been what we discussed because it came out of the way the ordinance is written about private driveways, right? That's where the number 4 came from in the first place. Or I might have said 6 because, you know, there's some state laws that call a minor subdivision no more than 6. So I think there's a little room to talk here, but certainly nobody's going to criticize you for choosing 4.
Yeah. And in my mind, and I don't know if this is true for everyone else, but in my mind, the minor subdivision in some ways gives a privilege to the locals almost first, because these are the people that I feel will use it most. And so, you know, anyway, so I think 4 or less, even 3, is about 3 to 4 is what sits in my mind as an appropriate number for Boulder as it is now. I don't know what, I'd like to hear what the rest of you think.
I'll make a couple of quick comments. One thing, 4 lots fits where fits a 20 acre parcels, of which we have a lot of parcels that are 20 or between 10 and 20 acres in Boulder. The second one, since we have adopted the fire code, and incidentally, Lee, I'm going to recommend that we just plan to get the fire code added to 151.10 as a uniform code. And that was just an omission, I think, when we adopted it.
Right. Yeah, that should be done.
But since the fire code only allows private driveways up to 5 dwellings, we probably couldn't go to 6 anyway. So we're talking either, so 5 would be the maximum under fire code for a private driveway.
Right. That's true.
Thoughts on lot size? Anyone else? 4. Good.
Yeah, I agree with that reasoning as far as 4, unless somebody else has, you know, 4 to 6. I like 4.
Yeah, I feel like in the interest of having normal lot shapes too, like a lot of the lots in Boulder are a bit like 20 acres or so in rectangles. So 4 rather than 3 or 5 would help that be a little more clear cut.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think we'll stick with that unless there are any objections. Moving on to C, what type of street access is permitted to lots in a minor subdivision? Well, we've talked a lot about this, right? Any questions on C, comments?
Is there a reason? I think it's good, obviously, because it's what we've been discussing, to allow it to be served by private access easements. Is there a reason we want to not allow the creation of new streets? I'm not sure that it would become a problem, but if anyone else has thoughts on that.
I just don't think that a person who is going to attempt to create and sell four lots, or quite frequently they're going to try to sell three lots because they're living on one of them, right? They're not going to have the resources or the capability to actually build a standard street, right? Even if we go into the larger subdivision standards and get the standard for streets more in keeping with what we have in Boulder, which is something that I agree with John about, is that we need to have a street standard that actually makes sense. But a four lot subdivision isn't going to support the construction of even your basic gravel road. You know, what we're trying to do here is have something that is a minor change in the community, a logical minor change in the community. I've got a 20, I want to divide, I want to live on one quarter of it and divide it in order to pay for that quarter. We'll have some driveways, or maybe in some places we'll make flag lots to accomplish the same purpose. We want to keep, you know, the word minor real here.
Yeah.
And once you start building streets, I don't think you're minor anymore.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah. I, on that line, though, Lee, I think there's no, since the town would have to accept a new public dedication,
right,
of a street, I don't think we need to put in here something that restricts the ability to do it. And also, by using the public way or space, that would prohibit something. Let's say some landowner says, you know, really, this subdivision is blocking the access to the BLM land behind my property. I want to leave a footpath dedicated to Nature Conservancy to get across my property. So that would be prohibited by this. And I don't think we accomplished anything by prohibiting it. So I prefer striking that sentence as well, like Elena suggested. Just be silent on it.
Well, okay. For clarification, I'm not necessarily suggesting we take that out. I was just looking for why we did. I guess that any other public way or space is what you're saying, John, could be like a path or something.
Yeah, it could be a path. It could be, adding some parking along Lower Boulder Road. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why someone as part of that subdivision might want to create public space. And I think there's no harm in allowing it. We're not requiring it. We could just, by being silent, leave it for the future. If there's a reason, someone can do it.
Is there any danger to that, Lee, that you see?
I would prefer to respond to John's comment by putting a period after the word street.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Does that Perfect. Work for everybody?
Yes.
And then we're silent on those other possibilities that John mentioned, and I think that's just fine.
Okay, great. So D, will flag lots be permitted to facilitate direct access for an existing street in minor subdivisions? Thoughts, comments on flag lots?
I think I'm starting to sound repetitive, and I wish, Lee, I had gotten these comments to you before the meeting. I will try to do that in the future. I apologize. The wording that you've got, I think, is good, but it's restricted to doing a flag lot because of access is the only reason.
Mm-hmm.
And two things that I can think of. Okay. One is that someone could choose to have a flag lot because they want to continue to own an irrigation well that's at the far corner of the lot from their house. Another one would be that someone creates a flag lot because only one part of the parcel has good enough soil for septic, and they both have to have the septic drain fields over in the southwest corner.
Mm-hmm. So what you're suggesting is that the Planning Commission could waive those width requirements for other reasons.
Right. So the wording I would suggest is that we could provide allow a flag lot based on the finding that the applicant has provided adequate justification and that the lot shape will not impair adjacent properties.
Okay. I don't have any heartburn with opening it up some. I think that the need to have a perfectly rectangular lot is, it looks nice on a map, but it doesn't always necessarily function very well in reality, right? And so I'm willing to open this up a little bit. I want to leave it with the Planning Commission's discretion rather than wide open, though.
Yeah, that's why I've used the word a finding that is justified and doesn't cause
a
problem.
Right. Okay, we'll tinker with that.
Okay, any other comments on flag lots?
Tina has her hand up.
Tina?
Sounds like you're speaking, but we can't hear you. Oh, we might have lost her.
Okay, I'm going to move on to E. What type of water supply is permitted for lots and subdivisions? So a little context. So the town has actually, I don't have it, Peg, you conveyed this to me, but the town has made it not a priority for us to follow out.
Hello?
Sorry, Tina? Yes, please try again.
Your audio is really flaky and weird.
Yeah,
is there a chance that you can chat your comment or question?
Or you could call in on your landline.
Yeah, try a phone number.
Okay, well, we'll go back to D if when Tina comes on board there.
Oh, she's going up to the town hall.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the town council asked us to not prioritize the hydrological study at this point. Given that and other things, I'm in agreement with E by hooking up to the Boulder Farmstead, the water, culinary water, and recommending and agree with the recommendation of not allowing private wells on that minor subdivisions at this time. Anyone else?
Can I make a comment?
Please.
So what about the people that have property that aren't serviced by the town water supply at this time?
Yeah, good question. Can we make, if a place is not serviced by the town water supply, can we give them the option of private wells? Is that conducive?
We could do that. You know, the reason that I wrote this as straightforwardly as I did is that this doesn't mean you can't make a subdivision there, right? You just have to go through the more complex, non-streamlined subdivision process. And what I would want to do, particularly given the town council's decision, I would say, okay, fine, if you're going to have a subdivision on wells, you give us a hydrological study. Again, we're back to the thing. This minor subdivision thing is very streamlined, very straightforward. It's a privilege. You can still go ahead and subdivide going through the more difficult process. And in that process, the Planning Commission could say, hey, if you're going to use wells, you got to show us that they'll actually work.
Okay. So my comment on this basically is it is applicable to me because I live on the edge of town and the town water
does not come to my property. So it's not necessarily that I, you know, get a voice in that, basically. So does that just make it so that because of where I live, I have to go through a regular subdivision, this regular subdivision ordinance?
That's the way it would be, the way it's written right now.
Okay. Thank you.
That may or may not be the right way to do it, but that's the way it's written right now.
Yeah, I don't know that I think that is the right way to do it.
I mean, there's only so many. I mean, the town does cover a lot.
Covers a lot of ground.
So the water does cover a lot. I think the thing is when you're moved out to the edge of town where the town water isn't available, they're wide open spaces. And yeah, so I would like to think about that a little bit.
So how much territory in the town is actually outside of, you know, that's a question to answer, outside of culinary water access? Does anyone know?
Well, I know, Khalid's right. The system stops just past Hills and Hollows. The subdivision we just approved for Ray Nelson was based on a de minimis water filing with the state for water. With the Gardner subdivision, the issue was that the Gardner RV park, the location he wanted originally was not easily accessible from Boulder Farmstead. So in that case, he moved the RV park. But again, there are big areas in Upper Boulder that are probably impractically far for running a water line. So it could be quite significant.
Okay.
I guess I'm wondering if the town council advised us not to move forward with the hydrological study right now, does it make sense to even limit this? Because it seems to me like it's a bit of a placeholder until we figure it out. But if we're not moving forward with it, we're not going to figure it out, I guess, right now. And I'm not sure that it's going to be potentially enough wells in the immediate future for it to matter. But I'm curious what everyone else thinks.
Well,
Matt, it's not just, I mean, it's just that we're not going to do the hydraulic study. Is that correct, that it's not going to the Planning Commission? But is there other, I mean, is the town still looking into it?
No, as far as I know, not. We'll have information from Boulder Farmstead irrigation water, but that shows nothing of well usage in town. Or a groundwater table in Lower Boulder, for example. So how much of a difference is it that, say, Colleen's property would have to go through a major subdivision review as opposed to a minor?
Well, you know, if I were rewriting the major subdivision stuff, which I suppose is ultimately going to have to happen, it would require a hydrologic study to support the availability of water to those lots. And that could be expensive. In the final analysis, if you don't do it that way and the town council is not going to do, I mean, the thing about an overall hydrologic study is that ultimately it saves landowners a lot of money, right? But if the council is not going to go that direction, then you have to decide how much risk you want to take. You know, I think the way to flex this a little bit right now is just to say that they have to be connected if they can be, but the Planning Commission can waive that requirement if you find that the extension of water service is infeasible.
Okay, I'm good with that.
That's the way to flex it right now, is to leave some discretion to the Planning Commission. Then if we do decide to rework the rest of what the code says about subdivisions, we'll talk about hydrologic studies at that point.
Sounds
that would allow
to me.
Somebody who's in Colleen's location to demonstrate to you that it's not reasonable to extend the water line to go ahead and propose wells.
I guess I sort of feel like if we're not going to limit wells in general in town, I don't see why we're limiting them in this scenario. Like if we were going to go ahead and say no more wells in town until we get the hydrological study, that makes sense. But I don't really see the point in making it just difficult for people doing this.
Well, we can just take this out if you want to. That's simple enough.
Yeah, that'd be my vote, but I don't know what everyone else thinks.
Yeah, if you took that out, you'd basically be going back to the 152.041G, which just says that you have to show you have availability of water.
Right.
And is that specific enough that we, you know, that it actually protects or looks at when there's a proliferation of wells on groundwater systems or not?
It really doesn't address the proliferation, which is what you showed concern about, Matt, and why Lee recommend a hydrology study. But it is what we have in our existing ordinances now, is basically that we require in that section 041 G1 and G2 that to subdivide, you have to show you have a subterranean field location and that you have water.
And we would just move that over here so that the minor subdivision chapter is complete.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if that's what people want to do, that's not hard to do.
So what's the final? So you're moving what over?
There's language that John just referred to in the rest of the subdivision ordinance about showing that there's at least the reasonable possibility of having a water supply. And we would just, you know, take a version of that over here and substitute it for what he says now.
Okay. Because I mean, I guess in my mind, for most of Boulder, you know, it's certainly, if you have access, it's much, much cheaper to hook up to the culinary supply rather than spend 12 to 15 grand on drilling a well, which most people, I haven't seen many wells being drilled here at all lately, to be honest. So,
yeah, and I think it costs like double that now, last time I checked.
Okay.
And I'm not opposed to what you put in there, Lee. I basically just feel I'm kind of wondering if there is an option for people like me that the water system does not reach me, you know?
Well, we would have to either let the Planning Commission have some discretion or go more generally and just say the applicant has to demonstrate to the Planning Commission that there's a water supply. The easiest way to demonstrate that, of course, is to say you're hooking on to the farmstead water if you can. And if you can't, then you have to say, well, we have wells and there's a reasonable possibility that they will be sufficient for lots, which is what the ordinance pretty much requires now.
So would you have to have your well drilled beforehand and your water right?
No, it's just, you know, the way you'd work that is to say, are there nearby wells? Are they productive? You know, you'd have to, you can't really levy, I'm not suggesting here that you levy some sort of really harsh burden on people. My thought was we permit minor subdivisions where you can meet these standards and you don't where you can't. But that doesn't seem to be people's inclination. So if we're going to permit minor subdivisions where you can't hook on, then I think you're stuck with a fairly generic way of assessing the water supply.
Okay, is everyone in basic agreement over that?
Yep.
So just to clarify, are we going with just taking over the language from the other thing?
Yeah, I'll move what's in the other part of the ordinance over here. I'll revise it so it's consistent with the way this is worded and just move that over.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, F. What about wastewater and minor subdivisions? That seems pretty standard, right?
Yep.
Any questions on wastewater, Commission?
Other than I'd just like to keep the wording the same in both sections for consistency, no, I think that's fine. I guess the specific one, with wells, looking at the Ray Nelson subdivision, we accepted having a letter from the state engineer saying the area was open for a drilling permit. I think, have we required that somebody actually have a perk test on the property before we allow subdivision in the past? The way this is worded now, somebody could just show on the map, I'm going to put my drain field here, and that would meet the wording.
Well, no, you'd have to show the soil survey.
Okay, if they have to have a perk test, then we should be explicit.
They wouldn't necessarily have to do a test. The soil survey is generally more accurate than perk tests are anyway, because it covers broader set of considerations. But there is a soil survey map for Boulder, and it is probably pretty much dead on. I actually, the person who did it was actually a student of mine a long time ago, believe that or not, all these connections. But there is a data resource in the form of an unpublished soil survey of Boulder that you could look at and say, you know, is this soil rated as suitable for on-site wastewater or not? Make it very simple for the applicant and for the Planning Commission, and it's going to be accurate more than 99 out of 100 times. So I think it's actually pretty easy for an applicant to demonstrate that they've got a suitable location. And in truth, since we're not letting them build on steep slopes or whatever anyway, almost everywhere in Boulder is going to meet this criteria. This is not going to be a big limiting factor on anybody.
Okay. Let's move on to G, unless there's anything else. Okay, minor subdivisions, avoiding natural hazards and protecting natural assets. Any comments on that? Questions?
Yeah. Anyone else? I'm speaking too much. Someone else can go first.
Sounds like.
Okay, Lee, you cited 152.201, and I did not find that when I looked at the codified ordinances.
Well, it's not in the codified ordinance. It's in this right here.
Okay, it's the
next section of this.
Okay, that's an internal reference. Got it.
Okay, yeah, that's the reference. That's an internal reference to this. Yeah.
Okay, got it. Now I see what you've done.
Right.
Okay, then. I was not clear on my, I had to think about this a bit and I haven't really thought it through completely. We already have a sensitive lands, hillside and mesa top ordinance, which does include wetlands. Is this more restrictive, less restrictive or redundant with the sensitive lands ordinance we already have?
Well, first, this is a lot more clear.
I would agree.
All righty, and my goal here, first and foremost, is clarity. This is really clear and simple. So somebody who's doing a small number of lots just rattles through the checklist and you're done. That overlay, Curtis could never even send me a map of that overlay. So I don't know.
I was gonna mention, to my knowledge, there's no FEMA with flood hazards or even wetlands at this moment.
There are jurisdictional wetlands in Boulder. I don't know that there's a FEMA flood hazard area.
That's the area, so.
But there are some teeny spots that I'm confident are jurisdictional wetlands. They're all associated with irrigated fields. And so there's some of that. And again, you know, there doesn't have to be a whole lot of anything on this list to just to make a comprehensive list that says, let's check these boxes off. If there's no flood, that would be very unusual for there not to be a flood hazard area, but I will pursue that further and see. There are streams, there are wetlands, and everything else that's there exists. So this is very similar to what the commercial development standards say.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This is taken from the commercial development standards with a little bit of additional detail. You know, there's not a disturbance limit in the commercial development standards because we're talking about more intensive uses. If you're talking about, you know, a minor subdivision with 5-acre lots, then this disturbance limit lets you disturb 22,000 square feet, which is a fairly big area when you start grading it. And it talks about, you know, trying to preserve existing trees, which are a fairly scarce resource in some parts of Boulder. And then the wildland interface code is down there dealing with wildfire issues. So, which needs to be added to the commercial development standards now that the council's adopted it. It's easy to do. But the idea is to say that there has to be a place to build on each of the lots you propose creating that doesn't bump into any of these issues. And I don't really think that's very hard for most landowners in Boulder to meet.
Great. Any questions further on this?
Fine with that.
Okay, we're going to move to H.
H is the buffer requirement that we wrote up for the commercial development standards, just carried over here. And eventually, as we fiddle with the code, we'll get it all consolidated to one place. But for now, I wanted this all to be in one place where you could see it. So you've already pretty much approved this language, adopted this language for the commercial development. And again, the vast majority of properties in Boulder are unaffected.
Questions on H?
Overall, Lee, would you say that this is, certainly it's clearer. So should I view this and read it as being a clarification of our land ordinance, or are you seeking for new restrictions?
Well, the problem with the way the existing ordinance is written is pretty clear. It asks you to list information, but it never says what you do with that information.
Okay.
Right? That's the difference. To try to boil it down as tight as I can boil it down, John, is what good does a list of information do you if you don't have a standard to use that information?
Got right? it. Okay. Now I see how to read this. Thank you.
Okay. Right. So this, you could ask for the information about all these things under the existing ordinance. But what would you do with that information once you had it? This basically says in a minor subdivision, you're going to have a building envelope designated on that lot that meets these standards. And these, you know, from that point of view, on most parcels of land in Boulder, this is easy to do.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Lee. Moving to I. Okay. Must minor subdivisions protect agricultural resources? So probably going to be some discussion here. I'll set out by saying that I think we're going to have to figure something slightly different out here because almost all of Lower Boulder is irrigated land, for example, mm-hmm. which would make any sort of subdivision impossible, I think. So I don't know what other people think. I wonder if there's, you know, I understand certainly that part of it is sticking to our general plan and retaining open spaces. Yet at the same time, is there a way to amend this in a way that makes it not completely prohibitive?
Well, of course, the weasel words here are wherever the site permits. And if you have a property where you've got half of it irrigated and half of it dry, then you would put your building envelope on the dry part, right?
So what is irrigated actually, I mean, what's the actual meaning of that? Does that mean where the sprinkler reaches? Does that mean, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, it's kind of fuzzy, and you can take it a long way down and it remains fuzzy. A person could say if a land has water rights, it's irrigated, but that's not always true. So you have a legal dimension to what's irrigated and what's not, right, as well as a physical dimension. And it might be well to say regularly irrigated or something like that, that implies a time, a frequency dimension to this. That might be a helpful addition. The intent here is to say, okay, you know, if you've got 20 acres and 10 of it is upland that's not irrigated, that's above a ditch, and 10 of it is below the ditch, you can slice that into four lots, each of which has a piece above the ditch and each of which has a piece below, right? And that way I've got my irrigated garden or pasture on my lot, and I've got a site to build a house that is not irrigated. And
I would agree with you, Lee, as long as you don't have the 1-to-3. That's why I've been recommending we get rid of the 1-to-3 ratio.
Well, you know,
that's exactly what you're talking about, that you've got upland and lowland, and you want to put the houses on the upland.
Well, you know, I'm willing, we talked about the 1-to-3 indirectly before, right?
Yeah.
But I'm perfectly willing to take the 1-to-3 out of the code altogether.
Well,
I've been keeping it because it was traditional, but if the planning commission says, hey, you know, there's enough disadvantages to that width requirement, then, hey, let's just write that line out of the table.
I think we can go back to I think we could have the discretion as a planning commission to let the owner explain why they made the lot shapes what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And then we evaluate if they cause any problems. So we would then have the discretion to approve whatever lot shapes made sense for that parcel.
I have no problem with that idea. I think it makes sense, because there are a number of properties that at least to some degree fit the description I've been giving, which is partly irrigated, partly dry. And you could put the homes on the dry and leave the irrigated under the ditch in production of at least pasture. And that would retain the character, the visual character of Boulder that everybody loves with the green lands, the green irrigated lands. It also has a lot of practical merit. Putting a house on irrigated land is an invitation to have a wet foundation or a wet basement, and putting them on dry land, generally they perform better. So, you know, maybe we have to, I think we have to have some discretion in here for sure, which is why that wherever the site permits is there. Maybe that's not the best way to say it. But I think we should try to discourage people putting houses under the ditch if a parcel will lend itself to a different pattern of development. And I totally agree with John that eliminating the lot width thing would help make that easier.
So does that mean your lot could be anything, or like is there any parameter then, or can someone have a 1 by 1,000 foot lot?
Well, I guess
that's silly, but you know what I'm saying.
Right. No, there's an extreme.
Yeah. If we use the finding, they would have to provide a reason why they did that.
Right.
And then we would have the discretion to agree or not agree and evaluate whether it's causing a problem. I will share with you an extreme. Well, no, let's skip that. I can give it. But I mean, for example, down on the draw, we have some of those lots that are 1-to-10. They're very narrow, and then they go all the way up to the top of the mesa. I don't see that they really cause a problem. You know, and there was a reason to do that. That was the only thing that made sense, because you couldn't put a lot halfway up the mesa.
Right.
Well, there is the example that with certain lots that already exist in town, that might be of a weird nature, that by changing that, then I don't know if this is issue, but neighboring owners are then subject to subdivisions that they thought would never happen because that's, you know, because it wasn't allowed because of the 1-3. So suddenly the value of their land diminishes in a certain way.
Well, again, that comes back to us as a planning commission evaluating the plat, saying, is this impairing adjacent property? Although I'm not sure that somebody not liking it is a reason for us to deny it. But, you know, I think that's why I say if we have to make an affirmative finding that it's been justified by the developer and does not cause a problem, we have a tremendous amount of discretion, yet we're working on an objective standard.
Right. Because, I mean, because in that case, we need, you know, it's the neighbors have certain rights too.
Right.
And so that needs to be.
So the planning commission has to take comments from the neighbors, right? You're going to hear from them if they have an issue with what they see proposed and move on. And, you know, in our previous discussion of flag lots, we came most of the way to this conclusion anyway, right? Which is that we would allow the planning commission to waive that lot width thing. And that flag lots could be made for more reasons than just access, right? We already checked that box off earlier in this conversation. So I really think we've come 90% of the way to this, and it allows landowners a flexibility that some of them probably need.
Okay.
I have a few thoughts that I'd like to share. One of them, back to the irrigated land thing, is just I'm thinking of certain, Matt, I'm thinking of like your property, for example, where the front part of it could be irrigated, the middle part of it is a slope, and then the other parts have some trees. So it feels like, where within this do you build on that if that's your lot? You know, it feels to me like people don't often have 20 acres that's 10 of it's irrigated, 10 of it's dry but flat with no trees. It's like if people have flat land that could be irrigated, it either is irrigated or could be and is set up as such. So I guess I wonder if the way that it's, I don't have a solution, but I wonder if the way that it's phrased kind of doesn't really quite allow you to be anywhere on some of those lots. And I don't think we'd want to put in any frequency with irrigation because we don't want to discourage people from irrigating so that they have more building potential either. And then the only other thing I wanted to say was kind of about the discretion thing. I, in some ways, am in favor of us having discretion about things so that we can use it and make certain decisions based on the case. My only warning about that, I guess, would be that, and this is just from personal experience, but the time that Dylan and I came to the Planning Commission with something, it's really rare in our ordinances that we give the Planning Commission discretion for things, and we came asking for it for something that was completely within the general plan and it wasn't used. So I feel hesitant, I guess, to put too much of that discretion in there because it feels a little too flimsy to me based on my experience with it.
Thank you, Elena. Any way to address that, Lee?
Well, you know, the ability to waive a part of the code is genuine discretion, right? To say that you're going to waive the 1-3 or 3-1, however you would prefer to say it, lot shape standard. That's genuine discretion to the Planning Commission. To look at the building envelopes is genuine discretion, but it's discretion that's guided. If you take a look at the list that's in G there, your building envelope cannot include any of those places, but it could include anything else the owner wants, and the Planning Commission doesn't have a say beyond what is here. So is that discretion? It's discretion within a certain box, within certain bounds. And I think that's what the law requires when you give a decision-making body discretion, is that it's not unlimited, that there are standards. That's why the existing subdivision ordinance is so severely deficient, is that you get a big list of information and a preliminary plat and good luck. There are no standards, right? And that is subject to abuses of all sorts of different sorts. This isn't subject to that type of discretion. This has got boxes around what you can do. And we have to talk about the shape of the box and change that if we want to, but there is a fair amount of guidance here for what the Planning Commission can and can't do. And that's, I think, that's what's desirable, is to have discretion where it makes sense, but to have that discretion be bounded by some standards. You know, if I've got an essentially flat, deep soil lot that I want to create, and it doesn't have any of those items that determine the building envelope to check off, then I can put the building envelope wherever the heck I want, and the Planning Commission has to approve it, right? So what we're doing here is giving the Planning Commission the ability to address specific issues.
Okay. And so do we need to add anything after this discussion in there?
Well, this discussion raises the difficulties, I guess, that are involved here. I believe that John's correct in saying that allowing people to mess with the lot shapes is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any reason why we wouldn't do that. I think we've already kind of agreed to do it. Beyond that, I think that to say that you're not going to consider the irrigated lands at all is not consistent with the general plan. And you are supposed to make decisions that are consistent with the general plan. So I think it at least somehow has to be a consideration. And, you know, I left it flexing with the Planning Commission deciding whether the site permits or not. We could change how we write that level of discretion up, maybe to something that people were more comfortable with. But we could also have a relative, you know, I'm not sure I think it's really necessary or good, because this minor subdivision thing is pretty simple, but it is a relative consideration. And you could formally make it a relative consideration. And that might or might not really change the difficulty of this particular subject. You know, my sense is that, having looked at every, got to remember that when I did that build out study, I looked at every parcel on the aerial photos. There are some parcels that are all irrigated. And yeah, that sets a limitation on this. Do you want people to be able to easily subdivide those, or do you want to make it a little bit harder, is one question you could ask yourselves. But there are also tons of parcels where splitting the difference has the possibility of working.
Right.
And so I think that to the extent that your job is to encourage development in the best possible places, then giving people an incentive to think about it that way, those who can, is a good thing. You know, I could make it a lot more complicated, and for bigger subdivisions I would, but my goal here, based on what I had heard, was, well, we have, you know, the local people who are trying to make it, they just want to sell a couple of lots. I tried to keep this so that it addressed all the issues, but it's pretty darn simple.
Yeah.
And sometimes keeping things simple leaves a few questions hanging.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate what you did, Lee. You know, to me, I share exactly the concern you're making. The way I state it is that under our current ordinances, the one thing that can happen easily and is happening is people are taking good ag land, chopping it up into squares, and people are selling it to investors and retirees. And not that I have anything against being a retiree, because I am one, but you know, I think that that's the thing we should be discouraging. So a couple of things beyond tonight's discussion we can look at.
Mm-hmm.
One is to really get into the cluster subdivision and see if we can actually improve that to really put some incentives into people clustering rather than chopping up into squares. Yep. That, because that that would leave one big intact field if it's under an ag easement.
Mm-hmm. We can do that.
I think that may be one of the directions we have to want to go, is to integrate our thinking with the cluster subdivision. And I'm almost, you know, I've talked to people, it's a pretty radical thing to do, but you know, maybe we should be saying that you can have either minor subdivisions or cluster subdivisions, but basically see if there's the political will in town to say, no, you can't take a 100-acre ranch and chop it up into 20 5-acre squares.
Right. Well, I think that would go a very long ways towards keeping Boulder the cool place to be that it is. You know, it's one thing to contemplate 4 or 5-acre lots here and there. But as you say, and hey, the build out study showed it, think about 455-acre lots. That's a lot of development, guys.
Yeah. I agree.
And the clustering could ameliorate some of that. I mean, the other thing beyond the cluster subdivision, and I know that we're going to get to that. I'm just trying to take this stuff one step at a time. The cluster thing we can do, we can't work on the cluster thing without working on the zoning.
Yep, agreed.
You know, and so you have to work on both subdivision and zoning. And the truth is that those two ordinances could have been written by different people for different places right now. The zoning ordinance has a certain amount of coherence to it. It's got issues with procedures and so on, but it kind of hangs together. What was written about subdivisions just doesn't hang together.
Yeah. Shelley has a comment.
Are you ready?
Go ahead.
Hey, you're talking about agricultural land that you're trying to say if somebody wants to put a house on it or subdivide it and so on. I know that federal guidelines of putting water applications on that land, they've got to have a minimal amount of acreage in it to do that, or to plant certain kind of plants and vegetations and so on. And I do not have the luxury of knowing Boulder and how much land is designated right now for agriculture, but to have it cut and have somebody come in and want to keep in that field of agriculture, they can't look at that land if it has been cut, and they don't have the luxury of having the federal government come in and help them in putting water applications on them, or helping them with seeding, you know, things that they have. How do I, my wording right now, but you know what I mean, of funding for seeds and so on that they have for farmers. So taking that out of agriculture and put it into a subdivision. But see, I do understand that Boulder is unique and every plot's different. The other part of this is when you put a subdivision in an agriculture land, it depends if it's flooding application or it's sprinkling application. The flooding area goes so hard and so on, and it's hard for water to go down into the soil, that it will run off into these subdivisions if it is not planned right. Or if it rains, you know, it's been handled in the past, but the rain will come down and all of a sudden that subdivision will be affected because it just won't run off right onto the land. So I don't know if that helps you, keeping agriculture and having people come back into Boulder that want to do that.
Yeah, thank you. I think, you know, one thing I want to add too is that, at least in my mind, and what I've seen over the years, is Boulder is changing from large-scale agricultural agriculture to smaller sustainable agriculture. So a subdivision might actually mean young people who want to grow food or have small-scale agriculture. So like keeping this in mind is part of the equation for me of what's happening, you know, about being able to build on irrigated lands or close to it, you know, so.
But if they want government assistance, they've got to have a minimal of 5 acres.
Yeah, most small scale ag probably don't want government assistance, just, you know, that's in my mind. But I'm just saying there are two paradigms to consider.
Yeah, but some do. And, you know, young families, that's how they start, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if how you want to plan ahead, what kind of market you think is going to happen for the area, what do you want to keep as people come in and leave? That's what we're here for, is planning ahead, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, I definitely think, you know, I mean, Lee's addressed it here. And, you know, so I want to check in with all of you. It's about 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock Lee's time. I would like to propose that we cover the second half of this next round and digest what we've done today. I'm sure Lee will be endlessly tinkering with this as we do back and forth. And I don't know, you know, I think it's, is it too early for a public hearing on this? In my mind, it is. What do other people think?
I think it's too early.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that the other two public hearings will hopefully not attract a whole lot of discussion. And you can make some, you know, constructive changes there. I will send you slightly revised versions of both of those ordinances that reflect tonight's conversation. And we can assume that those will be the hearing drafts for the hearing in March. And then after the hearing, or before, whichever you choose, we can come back to this minor subdivision thing. And I will send you a new version of that that tries to collect all of the thoughts that have come up here tonight. You know, we'll get it closer and closer to what works. And then I want to go back to one thing that John said that I think is actually super important, which is that if you have this minor subdivision procedure for the little guy, to put it in a cliche, right? I think you can then say, hey, our major subdivision procedure can do all sorts of things that we wouldn't inflict on somebody who's doing 3 or 4 lots. But if somebody's doing 25 lots, which is a lot in Boulder, we would be willing to do some things, including to require them to cluster those lots to have a better pattern of development. We can do some things. We're liberated by having this minor subdivision procedure to do some things with bigger projects.
Yeah.
So I want you to think about it that way, and I'll get these things off to you over the time between now and the March meeting.
Thank you, Lee.
Sure. Thank you, guys. I'm gonna depart.
Thanks, Lee.
All right. Have a good
Thank
evening.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for your focus, critical thinking, comments on this. It's complicated, and but we're moving through it, I think, accurately. So what do we got here next on the, okay, hydrology study status. So where we're at twofold is town council deprioritized, I suppose, the hydrology study. And at the same time, it's interesting because I talked to John Files several times, and he's absolutely overwhelmed and is in no place or time to actually give us a proposal at the moment. So we're sort of, so that sort of puts, that's the reality. That's where we're at. So I'm just going to move on from there unless there are any comments.
What is the deal with Jimmy Catmull said he has some information for us?
So when I'm not sure on the specifics when the information is all, when he has it all in hand, he's going to forward it on to the Planning Commission. So at least we have records of, I suppose, well use, well depth for Boulder irrigation, how much water they have on hand for culinary water and all that sort of stuff. I don't have the specifics from him yet, but he has said he'll get it to us. So that'll give us a glimpse of certain aspects of what's going on with the water in town, but not necessarily groundwater in all of town. Okay, so moving on to, so review action. Well, actually, before we go there, I'm going to flip stuff around and I want to see if there are any public comments on everything we've been doing before we go into action items and final business for next month. So I'm going to open it up for public comment. Please raise your hand or state your name and start talking. Let's see, Donna.
Hi, I always have something to say, and I don't know if it's right or not, but I have a little bit of question about the taking it into more of a subjective. I do agree Planning Commission should be able to suggest we would like to see clustering plan, not necessarily mandatory. I do believe that you should be able to say, this just doesn't make sense on the 3-1 here, but not necessarily throw the whole thing out. I know that when you were looking at roads, and I missed that section, I had to do something for work. When you previously had been looking at working with roads, you wanted to get away from the planning, but we already were letting the Planning Commission have some discretion. And at that point, Lee and others were saying, oh, that's not good. You need to just have rules because otherwise and this is true. It can become very political. It can be very subjective. And I think that you don't want to lose sight of having a set of rules with some leeway and not just throwing them all out. And there was a reason, Matt, you brought up the point of some people might be compromised if the 3-1 completely goes away. I'm one of them. So I was like, well, I don't know whether it's right or wrong. You know, it hurts us in one way. And so I just think that there just needs to be some thought put in not going back and forth of one side to the other, but finding a common ground and something where all sides are being met, if it's possible. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Donna.
I have a question.
Yes,
Shelley, I have a question.
Who's speaking?
Shelley.
Is this from the public or as a alternate?
And as a public, are wells being are they being monitored? Do they know how much all the wells?
No.
So that's why the part of the problem is, isn't it, with that study? I don't know. I'm just asking.
Yeah.
The study.
Okay. Is get them monitored or? Ask them
it's
to.
Not happening right now.
Okay. So is that something that they're looking at doing or something?
No, we were trying to do a hydrological study, trying to get a proposal for that, which would include looking at well usage and so on. But like I said, the town council isn't putting that forward as the priority. So we're not going to be following it out. So no, we don't have any private well data at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, Matt, I just want to make a comment. It's a priority, but unfortunately there's a complication, I believe, from Jimmy, he's saying from the culinary water. There's some complications there, the reasons why they decided to stop it. And so I think personally, since a high priority for them, but they cannot do this at this point.
Okay. Do we know what those?
I don't have it off. It was discussed in the last town council meeting. So
okay.
When it doesn't come up,
that would be part of it, wouldn't it?
We'll be clear of the reasons.
That's my question, is that could be part of it, is if they're not monitoring wells, how can they do a study on something that's not even monitored?
Well, it would include monitoring. That's part of the deal. So basically the information that Jimmy has is on the minutes from the town council. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, some of it. And it explains, I'm sorry, I didn't write it down, of why they decided to put it on hold, the study.
Okay, great, thank you.
There are reasons that they put it on hold.
Well, my question isn't the reason, it's just I wondered if why wells aren't monitored, because that is a hindrance in a study. Do you know why they're not, or who's responsible of doing that? The individual that puts a well in, or I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're trying to, you know,
figure that one out.
Basically, we've been trying to handle that by working with the town on the hydrological study, we could maybe get funding so private owners wouldn't have to spend a fortune trying to get their wells monitored, and to try and get grant resources on that. But like I said, right now it's on hold for not all reasons I know. So that's where we're at.
Thank you.
Anyone else with comments? Okay, countdown 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and thank you. So moving on from public comments to review action items, and let's start with that. John, did you have anything here?
Well, just as far as 22 priorities, are we talking 22 priorities as well?
Yeah. Is Elizabeth on the call?
She was.
Yes,
she was.
Yes.
Yeah. So maybe if you're there, Elizabeth, can you give us a review from what you guys decided on town council for 2022 Planning Commission priority? Was anyone else at the meeting or is aware of that?
Yeah.
I mean, that they just have wanted you to continue what you've been doing. And since they stopped the hydrology study, I can't remember if there's anything else.
Okay.
I think their main thing, I was on that call too, I think the main thing was just to continue like tightening up the ordinances so that, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, and we're definitely on that with Lee clarifying and moving through the, like he said, you know, that's a great beast of a, you know, it's like trying to, Thor trying to pick up the center of the world right there. So we're at it.
It's very important. I found when I was going through some of this other stuff, trying to get ready for tonight's meeting, I found one place where an or has been changed to an and it basically would say that you can't build a lot, a house on a lot that wasn't recorded prior to 1998. And I know the intention was or, I think the old ordinance had or, but somehow in the codified ordinances it says and. I will send that one to Lee to put on the list of things to clean up. But for the coming for new work, you know, when I ran for planning council, I said my goal is really to try to help make this town friendlier for families and working age families, working age people, families with children. And I've been going through with Steve Cox, he gave me a ton of stuff that he'd worked on regarding housing and affordable housing. I know that towns like Torrey are getting grants for affordable housing projects. I've barely tapped into that information. So sometime in the next couple of months, I'll start trying to bring some of that stuff to planning as far as things that we might be looking at to help the affordable housing supply here in Boulder. So that's going to be kind of one of my agendas, work items.
Okay. So is it too early to schedule? Would you say would you like to shoot for April right now as a tentative discussion of that?
That'd give me a deadline. I mean, at least by that point, I could kind of have a good summary of what was done. Talking with Steve, and he gave me a lot of people that he's talked to at Garfield County and Five Counties Association of Governments. I can at least try to pull that together and just say, here's where we've gotten to so far.
Okay, and I'll give everyone a heads up before it comes, but everyone can look into that at their discretion, and so we can have a really good discussion about ways to go forward with that. So let's shoot for April.
Tessa just said the town council also spoke about them. You guys have said transportation, but it wasn't clarified.
Sorry, transportation?
Yeah, I believe. Oh, now I'm trying to think really hard. They might be doing a transportation study, is what it was. And so there may be, if you guys feel there's transportation issues.
On roadways?
On roads, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think that's mostly Highway 12 and working with UDOT on.
Oh, right. Now, there were some questions about roads, dedicated roads that have been mis-surveyed or problems with those. So it was kind of, the conversation was sort of running between a transportation plan that included cleaning up some of the dedicated road and making sure builders maps of streets aligns with what the state and the county have as maps, which apparently there's discrepancy now. But there was also, remember early on you guys were talking about a traffic study. And so that was something that had come from the Planning Commission a long time ago. That conversation sort of got lost, but it would be part of a transportation plan if the council ended up going that direction. So there's a couple things that could be happening there.
So with the Planning Commission, so I'm looking at Elizabeth's things too, alignment of town and county maps. Is that something that the town council is suggesting the PC handle?
Not right now. It sounds like Judy Drain herself said she wanted to go to the county and make sure that they were looking at the same set of maps.
Okay. Speaking on that subject, because it's come up a bunch of times in the last couple of months, is, and maybe I'll, April, I don't think you found it either, but this sensitive land maps overlay.
It's in the general plan. I can try to find that.
Okay. Oh, that's where I've seen it. Yeah. So we do have it. Yeah. Okay.
We do have it. We do, as I was saying earlier, the flood zone, it is, FEMA has not mapped this area. So we do not have any flood zones technically that fall under FEMA.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's something you guys want to do a study on, since FEMA hasn't done it. We obviously do have flood zone areas, so.
I suppose it's something we should bring to the town council and see if they'd want us to pursue that. Or, yeah. I will handle that and forward that to maybe the next town council meeting. Anything else, any other items for the commissioners that they think is important to bring to the rest of our 2022 year to focus on?
Elizabeth also just said Judith Sky with the FEMA study, yeah.
Okay. Okay, good. Then let's switch to business at hand for March. Sorry, I almost skipped a month. Okay, what do we have in the table, Peg? We have two public hearings.
That's all I have down right now, two public hearings on the vested rights and on the property line adjustment.
Okay, then we're going to do the second half of the discussion on the minor subdivision.
Okay.
I suppose we should revisit the, well, I'm sure there'll be some discussion on the larger one as well.
And I guess ongoing work on definitions.
You're going to work on definitions?
So I say there's ongoing work on definitions. But
correct. Sure. Correct.
It'd be good to keep that on the agenda because we may occasionally find a definition that's causing a problem. We need to take action on it. So it's on the agenda we can.
Okay.
Okay. And John, you were going to send me, you were going to send me corrections to the minutes that you guys approved.
I've got that on my action items.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, good. I think that's it. So thank you everybody for your time.
I have a question.
Yes.
I did have one quick procedural question.
Yes.
Go Matt ahead. Or Peg, what's our procedure if we need to get some information from Mark McKiff? Sometimes I'm thinking about some idea and the first thing in my mind is this even legal? Do we have any kind of formal procedure for directing questions to him or just initiate the question?
We don't have a official formal procedure, but I think if you sent a memo and clarified that you are a member of the Planning Commission, Matt, I think he's responsive to things that you have sent, right?
So rather than
try to funnel through Judy right now, which seems like a little problematic, it would be, if you have a specific question, identify yourself as a member of the Planning Commission and phrase your question.
All right, okay, thank you very much. I'll try to be more respectful of everyone's time by getting some of my comments to Lee before the meeting. I think that'll help too. So I apologize for how much time I took.
Thank you, John.
John, I don't really think that you need to apologize for the time that you take because Matt has a way of letting you know, and I appreciate the information that you bring to the town, to the Planning Commission, and I just want you to know that.
Okay, thank you.
And yeah.
April, were you aware of any other possible, have you had conversations with anyone on any applications forthcoming?
No, but Tina has a comment first.
I'm sorry?
Tina has a comment? Oh, I just wanted to let you know that I kind of followed up on the dumpster and the trash stuff that happens with businesses around here with the county. And at this point, each property owner and each business is taxed for trash. So as long as there's no problem, as long as there's enough trash receptacles and they're willing to put it on actual business property, if it's all used by everyone, can be used by everyone, that is where it stands at the county level.
So if you're basically saying if Ray was to put his own dumpsters on there, they'd be open to the public as well?
That's correct.
Okay. Do we need to give that information to him or how did we leave it?
Well, basically, we have a policy statement on his CUP about having some kind of resolution for what he's going to do with his trash. And as a planning commissioner, I think that it's possible that we've jumped the gun as far as I just don't think it's feasible for us to ask only one person in town with a business to deal with their trash other than with the county at this point. But I might be wrong.
Since I proposed that condition, I think clarify that the intent was if it's legal for him to use the county dumpsters, that's his plan.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah. if he determines it's legal and he's got a way to get the trash hauled down from his place to the nearest dumpster, that's his plan.
Okay. Yeah. And I can forward that information to him to let him know.
Okay, great. Thank you everyone for your time and attention to detail and your hard work. So see you all in March, and that's it.
So I'll make a motion that we close the meeting. I'll second it.
I'll second that motion. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Joanna Hughes, aye.
Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John?
Aye.
All right. Have a good evening, everybody. Thank you, Peg. Thank you, April.
Thank you, Matt. Good night, everybody.
Good night.